Friends, welcome back to another episode of Disciple Henson. And we've got a special guest in the studio this morning. Mike DeBoer is here, back in the studio. Mike, it's been a while since we've had you on here.
Yeah, it has been.
That was like at the kind of pretty, the sort of beginning stages of this podcast.
Could have been, yeah. We were talking about God's will and decision-making, yeah, I think. Yeah. Yeah,
I think at that time we had like maybe under a million followers. I think we're well over that now.
I'm sure we are.
It's a very different stage
I know,
of the game.
And those likes really help us feel good, don't they?
Yes. Good to hear from you, man. Give us an update. How are you doing? How's the family doing?
We are all well. Thank you for asking. We're all well. We've had periods of time where we're particularly concerned about our son, Mitchell, who's in China. Mm. He's well and healthy, and the church is growing there, so we're excited about that. He's practiced distance learning as an educator for probably about 3 months now, while we're just kind of getting our hands used to that here in the States. Other than that, everyone else, Madeline's at home, and Mary Alice is working. We're all working from home.
Okay. Good. Glad to hear that. Glad to hear that Mitch is doing well. That's good to hear. Well, I'm so glad to have you on the show here. Daniel and I have been discussing this topic of sanctification here in recent weeks on the podcast. And you recently led a first hour class through a workbook called Real Change, right? Based on a longer book called How People Change. But this is a book all about sanctification. So I thought it would be great to have you on the podcast and for people to hear a little bit about this book. So thanks for being here. So before we kind of dig into kind of the specifics of the book, what's Real Change about? Can you give us kind of an overview of the book?
Yeah, Real Change is, as you said, Jeff, is a compilation, I think, maybe a condensation of an earlier book about how people change by Tim Lane and Paul Tripp. That book had great content. It was a little bit unwieldy and difficult for people to kind of go through. And so some others came along and condensed the heart of that book and the truths of that book and put it in a pretty small little book. It's really only 6 chapters. And I think its attempt is to capture in a beginning and yet an ongoing sense of what it means to change as a Christian. I think it's possible for Christians, someone even like me who's been a Christian for a long time, to find ourselves not really changing in some of those areas that we just kind of become used to. It's a little bit like something like a pile I create in my house and I leave and I just kind of walk around it and don't notice it until someone else points it out to me.
Yeah.
Or so I've heard. I mean, people do that, right. I guess. It's like something you just kind of become used to and walk around and live with. And I think this was really helpful for new Christians, people who've been Christian for a very long time, to take another look, another pass at some of those things that God has probably pointed out before, but we've kind of, for one reason or another, not attended to in the way that we should or could have, and part of it could be because we just didn't know what to do.
Yeah. That's great. Have you been encouraged? I mean, I think you guys just finished going through the book. Have you been encouraged
by the feedback? We did just finish. In fact, this Sunday, we're going to do a kind of a Zoom class to kind of celebrate some of the things that we've seen God do. Mm-hmm. I've been very encouraged by some of the responses that I've heard from people who have continued through the class. And probably most close to me is the change that I've experienced. And so I'm very encouraged. I'm definitely a real change guy.
Yeah. And we'll look for ways to share some of those testimonies with the congregation just so you can hear more about how people have been helped by this. Let's begin thinking a little bit about sanctification, or growth in the Christian life. I think some people sort of think, well, I've been, like you said earlier, like I've been a Christian for a long time. What can I learn about this? Or maybe some people think, when I finish X, when I graduate from school or when I get married or when I get to kind of this stage of my life, then I'll begin to pay more attention to my spiritual walk. You know, what would you say to these people? You know, why is this kind of issue of spiritual growth, of sanctification, important?
I think it's a great question. And I would go back to, several things. I mean, I think, you know, back to what we used to have often called the Great Commission. You know, the idea is to be disciples, disciple makers, right? That's someone who follows Christ wholeheartedly for our whole life. You know, what's the great commandment? To love God and with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind, to love your neighbor as yourself. You know, those kinds of expectations, requirements, commands are life-consuming. And I think growing toward the image of those things is something that happens throughout life. One of the verses that we look at early on in this study is 2 Corinthians 3:18, which is really familiar, but so's a penny. And if I ask people to draw the head side of a penny right now, I doubt many people would know which direction the president's face goes or what's on it. We're familiar with it, and when we're familiar, often we think we don't need to know anything about it. Mm-hmm. We already know enough. But the truth is, we can be familiar with things and not really know it. So Paul writes in 2 Corinthians 3, "And we, with unveiled face, all reflect the Lord's glory, are being transformed into his likeness with ever-increasing glory, which comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit." So there's this sense of ongoing growth. We're being transformed from one degree of glory to the next. Mm-hmm. And I think even sometimes even more basic than that, in my mind, I go back to Romans 1:16, where Paul says, "I'm not ashamed of the gospel, because it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, first the Jew and also..." But I think the idea of salvation, if we're really thorough about it, isn't just something that happens at a point in time. It's something that goes on and then something that's completed fully. So the gospel is the power of God for saving, even now. And if we're not being saved in some way, you know, changed, transformed, I think we need to look at ourselves. We need to look at what's going on, you know, look more closely at that.
Yeah, that's right. Correct. I think some way I've heard it put is that Christ came not only to save us from the consequences of our sin, but also the power of sin.
The power.
And that's an ongoing process for all of our lives as Christians.
And that's not to say it isn't a battle, or that we wouldn't, or that we somehow reach a level, like learning to water ski. I remember when you finally keep being drugged through the water and you finally clear the surface and you can ski, you know, well... you know, it's not like that. We don't reach this level where all of a sudden now we can just ski easily. It's always a battle, but I think there should be noticeable changing if we're really growing.
Yeah. I think one of the reasons why we struggle in our thinking about sanctification is right there, that dynamic between our effort and God's work. And that's something that Daniel and I have talked about. As you think about the material in this book, you know, any ways that you would help us put those two things together, kind of God's work in his grace and yet our effort, you know, in the sanctification?
It is a powerful and highly, it's a necessary question, because the answer to that has a lot to do with what happens going forward. I think the whole, maybe as we talk more, that will become clearer, but to say this right now, one way that you respond to that question leads you into a pattern of trying harder. And really what it does is it somehow moves away from trust, repentance, and believing, which is what brought us into faith, which what God uses, requires of us, and expects and gives us to come into faith. We leave that and then move on into somehow some more and more a form of our own works, even though they're good works, but it's self-righteous and it will not accomplish what God's wanting to do in us. So somehow learning to approach those areas in our life that we need change in by means of repenting and believing the gospel, repenting and believing the gospel, and doing that in community with other people leads to a vastly different outcome.
Yeah. And I suppose if you remove the other side of the equation altogether, that effort side, and just talk about God's work, then that could produce a kind of passivity, you know, an antinomianism, perhaps.
Sure, yeah. You know, I've read books earlier on that I was a big fan of. I thought at one time, you know, and they've come to be kind of characterized as "let go and let God," right? Uh-huh. You know, so somehow, I had a friend in high school who, you know, he prayed in the morning to be filled with the Spirit. So no matter what he did that day, no matter how brutal or ridiculous he was, it was kind of like, I'm filled with the Spirit. Well, no, you're not. Yeah. You know, but that's kind of the approach he took.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, no, either of those extremes isn't going to lead us to the kind of fruit, the kind of transforming that we're talking about right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, part of our work here in this process is thinking rightly about what's going on in our hearts, in the world, in around us. So a big part of this book is unpacking kind of this model of growth. You know, David Pallison calls this kind of the two trees or three trees model based on an image in Jeremiah 17. And this diagram is helpful. If I can, I'll try to put an image of that diagram on this podcast description somehow. But like, walk us through that diagram and kind of what it's trying to communicate.
Yeah, I, like you, you know, I'm not totally comfortable with the diagram yet in the sense that it totally works in helping my thinking. But it's, you know, I'm a visual person, so I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. But I think there are some basic components of this two trees, three trees model, if you're talking about the cross as a tree, that are helpful to think about. And they're the basic sessions or chapters of this book. One is kind of change in general, but then the second is what we refer to as heat. Mm. And heat is the situations that we face.
Okay.
Like, for example, when I realized 25 minutes before we were going to start that I hadn't gotten ready to come yet, that's heat.
Yeah.
You know, we might call that a trial, which would be accurate too, perhaps, but some heat isn't always something that we create. So we're living in a time of heat right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, COVID-19, our response to it, the medical mystery and risk of it all, the loss that many people around the world are facing because of loved ones who've succumbed to this, all the attempts we are taking to keep each other safe, have created all kinds of heat. Mm-hmm. And those are things that have happened outside of ourselves. You know, go ahead.
And in the diagram, this is like a sun, right?
That's right. The heat is like a sun, and it's shining. And they go on to say, that the author's going to say, that heat isn't always something negative. So heat could be a major influx from an estate. Mm-hmm. You know, a parent dies and leaves you way more money than you ever thought, and property in Hawaii. You know, or something like that, wherever your fantasy is. You know, it could be something like that then causes pressure as well. So any situation that puts us under some kind of pressure would be heat. And so that's like, as you said, pictured like a sun. Mm-hmm. Entering into a new relationship, being a parent, entering into a marriage, all those things bring some kind of pressure.
Yeah.
Out of that, there are two kinds of responses, or kind of that heat falls down on two trees, two roots. And when we think about a root, we're thinking about our heart. Mm-hmm. We're thinking about that center of our thinking, our feelings, our decision. If you go through the Bible and you trace the word heart, you can see heart related to thinking, related to feeling, related to deciding. It's the decision-making center of who we are. And when our heart is focused on kind of me and myself, it can lead to what the model calls thorns, or God dishonoring self-focused ways of responding. Mm-hmm. So when I learned that I can't, you know, that I need to do certain things from home, I can respond in a way like, oh my gosh, I got to start doing this. I got to, you know, and which is maybe more of just a self-response rather than thank you, Lord, for bringing this, for allowing this. Mm-hmm. Help me figure out how to respond. Yeah. You know, so one way is the thorns. It's those responses that you see in your life that are not God-honoring. And those are some of the things that I think, as we talked about earlier, Jeff, that I think we sometimes ignore. And I can share more about later.
We'll get into that.
Yeah. The other response would be, as I said, kind of in repentance and belief, trust in God. And often I think, and we even talked about this before, I think, as I think about trust in God, one of the practical ways that works out in a person's life is being thankful. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Lord, recognizing God's control and right to be in his spot. And Tim Keller said the basic storyline of the Bible is, I am God and you are not. I think that's one of those things that we lose sight of, right? You know, that so thanking God in the situation is recognizing his place. Yeah.
Yeah. And that would be a fruit, like you said.
Then that leads to a fruit of a right response. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we see reaping from those, from the thorn. We see reaping from the fruit.
Right. The consequences.
The consequences of what happened, yeah. And then, of course, the cross is central in that our ability to respond, to have a new heart and to respond in a way that leads to good fruit comes from what Christ has done for us in the gospel. Yeah. Apart from that, we're just doing our own efforts.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I really appreciate about this model, and again, we'll get into these things, but you know, it's just how it recognizes that so much of the sin in our lives aren't just about the outward actions that we do, or even the good things that we do, you know, if we talk about fruit, but it all flows from a heart, you know, it all flows from kind of who we are.
From what's within.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jesus says what's within a man, you know, those things that defile a man come from within, come from his heart, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and Jesus is really clear about that. And I think it's easy, even for those of us who followed Christ for a long time, to get that fuzzy.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things we often want to blame for the thorns in our lives instead of our hearts is the heat, right? You know, you talked about heat being any situation that puts on pressure in our lives. So, you know, like I said, we often want to blame the heat, but, you know, what are some wrong ways that we think about heat in our lives? Why is this such an important concept? Kind of this teaching about heat.
Well, I think it's helpful to think about heat as that for a number of reasons. And maybe one of the primary reasons, I think, is that if I recognize this situation that brings pressure, I'm acknowledging that God's in control of this and in this with me. Rather than which is a beginning of a right orientation to just living life in general, because the other alternative is to orient myself as though I'm the captain of my own fate, or you know, yeah, I'm saved, but I'm on my own today. And we're too sophisticated. We don't say those things to each other. How was your quiet time? Well, I've learned I'm by myself. We don't say that, and yet sometimes functionally we act that way.
Yeah.
So heat is, you know, I think heat is really, it's helpful to see that because we recognize the circumstance, the situation we're in, and we recognize that God allows that to happen. He's using that in our lives. And also it helps us to begin to acknowledge what happens next, whether we respond in faith, whether we respond in an ungodly way or a self-full way. I think it's just helpful to understand also that heat just comes. I've been following Christ for such a long time, I don't have heat now. Well, yes, you do. You just aren't paying attention or wait, and it will be coming. So I think that our life is just filled with that. And I think that's part of where we are this side of eternity.
Yeah. I think it's so, that's so helpful, you know, for us to recognize that this heat is beyond our control, right? It's mm-hmm. not kind of, I'm being punished for this or that yeah. necessarily. I mean, there are consequences to our actions, but doesn't necessarily mean whatever heat you encounter, you can trace it to a particular action.
I think that's really helpful to mm-hmm. recognize too. I'm glad you brought that up, because there are times where a person could find themselves trying to trace it back to find that if I can just figure out where this came from, then I can make it go away. Mm-hmm. And I think our job isn't necessarily try to make a change to the heat, unless, of course, it's directly related to something we've created in our own life.
Right.
But more of it is about how we respond to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think of 1 Peter 1, mm-hmm. 6, where, you know, Peter talks about how we're waiting for our salvation to be revealed the last time. In this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while you may have had to suffer grief in all kinds of trials. Mm-hmm. Right? These have come so that your faith of greater worth than gold, which perishes even though refined by fire, may be proved genuine and may result in praise, glory, and honor when Jesus Christ is revealed. So even there, we see kind of that reality of heat in our lives. But then we also see that, you know, God is at work in that heat, that there's a purpose, that he understands what we're going through.
I like that picture so much, and I've often heard that picture in that Peter writes there about faith being refined as though gold by fire, as though somehow, you know, we'd increase the quantity of our faith. And I don't really know that that's what Peter's getting at there. I think when you think about gold being refined by fire, it's the purity, it's yeah. the realness mm-hmm. of it. Mm-hmm. It's the substance of it that mm-hmm. grows and it gets stronger and it's more, and it's so valuable. Yeah. You know, I just love that picture. Yeah. And that's what trials and heat, that's part of the purpose of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So this morning when you were, when you recognized your, that you had forgotten about this meeting, that created some heat in your life. Well, walk us through this. Did you recognize what was going on? How did you think that through in terms of heat?
Well, it's a situation that creates pressure, yeah. right? For me to think about it in terms of heat recognizes that this is a growing opportunity. Mm. It kind of just sets my mind in a way to think about it.
That's good.
It categorizes it mm. for me in a certain way that I'm learning. Almost said learned. I'm trying to avoid the ED words like as though it's past tense and I'm done now, because that's, oh boy. Yeah, but I'm learning how to frame those experiences more.
Yeah.
So this is heat. So, oh yeah, and heat can go this way or can go that way. So what am I going to do? You know, so I respond in recognition and thankfulness and, you know, oh God, thank you, I'm late. Well, now I don't mean thank you like I love being late. That's not, but I, you know, thank you that I'm in this circumstance. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, and I'm going to just get about the business. And that avoids, any number of things, blaming myself or Mary Alice. Yeah, no, I didn't do that, thankfully. Well,
you ended up being on time. And,
yeah.
And you responded very gracious to me saying like, hey, thanks for the reminder. I'll try to be there soon. So I appreciated that.
Yeah, I did too.
But that's helpful to think of, again, just putting kind of that circumstance in that category, right? Mm-hmm. And thinking about how am I going to respond now?
Yeah, and that's such a little experience, and yet our life is filled with little experiences, yeah. right? Yeah. Dad, you know, kids say, or honey, can you, you know, or you just remember something that you didn't notice on your calendar, or you didn't set it in your calendar like you thought. You know, all of those are just aspects of life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, then let's think about thorns. Mm-hmm. You know, you talked earlier that thorns are kind of these responses that that we see in our lives that are not God honoring, and you know these things flow from kind of the sinful root, right? The sinful heart, the aspects of our hearts that are corrupted by sin, you know, in mm-hmm. our thinking and our decision making and so forth. What are some common thorns that we see kind of in our lives and in the lives of people in our congregation?
Well, I think Colossians has some really good response to that. Colossians 3, you know, if we look there, Paul writes a list that's repeated in other places or similar in other places, but he talks about a variety of things. He talks about anger and wrath, mm-hmm. malice and slander, filthy language, lying. He talks about impure sex, you know, activity mm-hmm. or desire, impurity, lust, evil desire, greed, all kinds of things like that.
Yeah.
Which is just certainly not in no means an exhaustive list, but a list of the kinds of things that we find ourselves operating out of, turning to, defaulting to in our responses to heat.
Mm-hmm.
Left to ourselves, and even as a believer, you know, in our flesh, we can respond in any number of ways like that. We could also respond in ways that are self-justifying,
mm-hmm.
Or where we try to prove ourselves. People get into that in Christian churches. They try to they feel better about themselves because of the church they attend, who their pastor is, what
right.
you know, podcasts they listen to. Hopefully, mm-hmm. you'll listen to this, mm-hmm. but you know, or what Bible study they're a part of.
Mm-hmm.
Which all of that is great, but that can all be self-righteousness too.
Wow, that is interesting to think about those things as thorns, right? Because mm-hmm. you talk about slander, anger, those kinds of things we understand, but then to think about self-righteousness, you know, mm-hmm. kind of legalism as the fruit of an evil heart. We don't often think that way.
No, we don't. And I think that the tendency, and this is a danger for all of us, and I think yes. the enemy really loves it when we just focus on behavior. So a number of those things that Paul lists kind of sound like behaviors, but you don't have to go very far behind them to start thinking about the desires of a heart.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one of the things that I really like about this book is that it doesn't just look externally. It keeps pressing us to look back into our heart and what's really there. So, you know, he talks about there are various things that it's just some examples. He gives worry and escapism. Oh my goodness, that's a big issue right now.
Yeah.
You know, not just for kids, you know. How many of us have deleted a game off of our phone or something because Wordscape over, you know, or whatever it may be, you know, or denial, ignoring or pretending that there isn't a problem, anger and blame, self-pity, feeling sorry for yourself, fear where you shrink back from something or despair. You know, all those things could be examples of self-relying response.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think it's important to remember that thorns come from our hearts.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's enough for that.
Yeah, so that well, right let's I'll pull on that thread a little bit more. So, you know, you start to recognize some thorns in your life, you know, maybe some of those forms of escapism or self-justifying. Where do we go with that in order to get at our hearts, right? Because like you said, it comes from our hearts. We see the thorns. We recognize there's a root under it. How do we go about sort of discerning what's going on in our
Take
hearts?
Take the real change class.
Okay.
No. That's such an important question because this is where it gets harder.
Yeah.
I don't know many of us who are glad to see our own sin.
Mm.
Because it's humbling. It strikes at the root of who we are, one aspect of the root of who we are. Now, thankfully, we've been changed and we've been given a new heart.
Yeah.
We couldn't even have this conversation if we didn't have a new heart.
Right.
But keeping that in mind, you know, James talks about this. Where do those conflicts come? They come from something that's within, that's mm-hmm. deep within. Jesus talks about that, you know, in Mark 7 and Luke 6. Where evil comes from. And I think the way we get at that is by the questions that we consider some of our responses, that we bring to our responses. And so there is some room for reflection. Mm-hmm. It's really helpful to have reflection with someone else doing it with you.
Yes, that's huge.
Yeah, it really is. It's really helpful. And, you know, and in the book, they give us 20 questions to diagnose your heart. Well, I could read them all now, but, not going to.
Right.
I'm not going to. But simple questions like, what am I loving more right now? Mm-hmm. Or what am I looking to for comfort or for refuge? Mm-hmm. I read through the Psalms often, and we're reminded in the Psalms that God is our refuge, but it's very easy to turn to other things for refuge, for rest, for respite, for relaxation, for comfort, you know, those kinds of things. What am I hoping will make my life happy? You know, so there's questions like that that you can ask yourself.
We were talking about earlier how Michael's series through Hosea was so helpful and kind of connected to this, because so often the way God is going after Israel is the way they were looking for security and, pleasure and all kinds of kind of fundamental needs kind of in the idols of their day instead of God. And what a personal affront that is to God as those who should be kind of in covenant relationship with him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those heart idols.
I think one of the challenges that we find ourselves in as followers of Christ, I find, okay, just me even, is that we can find ourselves getting to a place where we wholeheartedly endorse certain things as sin, like I said earlier, and there are other things in our own life that we minimize, and we kind of just live with. And I think those are the things that we need to ask some of these questions about. Those, and if you're having a difficult time trying to figure out what some of those things are, I've got a really simple solution for you. If you live with anybody, just ask them. Say, I really want to know.
Yeah.
No, you don't. Yeah, no, I really do. If you ask them, they can tell you.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, boy, that would be so good for you.
Oh,
at the same time, that'd be so hard.
Because that leads to the responses that typically happen.
Yeah.
So maybe you should ask for it in writing or something like that, where you can consider it in your men's or women's group.
Yeah, that's good. That's
exactly.
One last question. You know, in all this, how do we keep the gospel in view, right? I think often when we delve into these issues of the heart, we can become some people can become too introspective, and perhaps too discouraged by their sin. How do we do that in a way that keeps the gospel in view in all this?
Well, I think that probably the best answer to that is what comes next when we talk about the cross. But I think you're right. I think people can become despairing, and I think they can look for the answer in the wrong place with introspection. I don't think introspection in itself is a problem, as long as we know, there's a purpose to why we're doing it.
That's good.
You know, I think if the point is to understand our heart in light of our relationship with God through Christ, we're going to do better.
Yeah.
You know, so I would say if someone's struggling with despair, that would be a great time to reach out to speak to the Lord about that despairing. Mm-hmm. We learned about that in Psalm 6. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things I continue to be impressed with in the Psalms is the need to take our travail to the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
We learned about that in Hosea as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so do that, and then maybe share with someone else.
Yeah, amen.
Yeah,
this is not introspection for its own sake, but rather we're aiming at drawing close to God through Christ.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's well said. Well, as Mike alluded to, we'll definitely continue this conversation in the next episode. But Mike, thanks for joining us for this one.
My pleasure.